Convince me! Convince me! Party time! Excellent! What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of your favorite Facebook show, your favorite podcast, or at least ours. We hope it's yours, and everybody you knows. But it is another episode of Convince Me. I'm Andy Rutherford, joined as always by Mr. Brian Bennett, Mr. Casey Elrod. Gentlemen, what's going on?
Do I win? I mean, after that, do I win? I hope so.
Well, the fun has just begun, my friend.
Hey, I got two words for you, Rod. Two words for you. Oh, behave.
Oh, my gosh.
That was awful. Bennett, are you ready for this?
I'm ready. I'm actually excited. This is going to be a good one. I can already tell. It's going to be a good one.
Tonight's show, for those that may have didn't catch the teaser, we're talking of two of the greatest works of a Saturday Night legend, Mr. Mike Myers. Tonight, we are discussing The Love Guru versus Cat in the Hat.
Yep.
Not. those were the two worst. Maybe that's a show someday. But we're looking at the two franchises tonight. Myself arguing on behalf of Wayne's World, Mr. Elrod arguing on behalf of Austin Powers, and Mr. Bennett, a big fan of both, being our mediator tonight. Bennett, any opening thoughts before we jump right in?
I don't know, guys. I'm interested to hear this one out. This may be my favorite episode. I say that every week, but I got a feeling this is going to be my favorite episode.
Well, then let's get right into it. Kick us off, Bennett.
All right. Now, the 90s, as we know, we lived the 90s. That was home to some of the best comedy movies and some of the funniest actors during their prime. You know, think back, we had Jim Carrey, Robin Williams, one of my favorites, probably one of y'all's favorites, Adam Sandler, Eddie Murphy. And then we have the gentleman that we are going to talk about tonight. And that is Mr. Mike Myers. Now, Mr. Myers has grossed $4 billion worldwide on the big screen. And he is most famous for his roles in Tonight, Wayne's World, and Austin Powers. And tonight, here on the show, we're going to settle a little debate as Rudd and Elrod try to convince me which Michael Myers movie franchise is better. Is it Austin Powers or is it Wayne's World?
Probably Shrek, but that's not an option.
Maybe. I've never seen Shrek, honestly. I'm just going to put that out there.
Camden's almost at that age. You're about to watch
him. I'm going to try not to. We'll see how that goes for me. All right. I figured tonight, fun little way to determine who goes first to make it fair. I don't want to be an Austin Powers question. I don't want to be a Wayne's World question. It's a Saturday Night Live question.
Ooh.
Now, you can either – y'all got a pen and paper?
I can
– if not, that's fine.
I have markers because I have a six-year-old. I had a pen, but it's gone because I have a six-year-old. Yeah, let's hit it.
Okay. Now, we know he – was on Saturday Night Live from, I think it was like 89 until the mid-90s. And I want you guys to tell me, without going over, how many episodes was he in? If both y'all go over, it'll be the closest.
Okay.
All right. Y'all ready?
Yep.
Let's see it.
49.
75.
What'd you say, Elrod?
49.
49. The correct answer is 121.
That's quite a
Mr. Rutt. I believe you are closer. Do you want to – I'm sure you don't. Do you want to start or do you want to defer?
As always, I will defer.
He's deferring every time.
All right, Mr. Arrowhead, let's hear about Austin Powers then. Give me your opening statement.
Let's hear about some Austin Powers. Bennett, late 90s, early 2000s. There's two movie franchises that define this time. American Pie. I don't think anybody can doubt that. The second franchise, Austin Powers. Austin Powers defined the late 90s, early 2000s in terms of me, you, we're what? You were how old? 12, 13, 99, somewhere in that range?
Something like that.
Austin Powers was not only a defining franchise in terms of us, at the box office, it was tremendous success at the box office. Over $600 million between the three movies. Everybody still wants that fourth movie. We don't know if it's going to happen or not. Well, tonight we'll talk more about the box office, and we'll also talk about how Austin Powers is not only the three movies are really funny, really great. Austin Powers is an iconic character in American cinema now. There's a deep bench of characters. The fact that Mike Myers was able to play both main characters for each of the movies is just mind-boggling. We'll talk more about that too. I will say this. Wayne's World did really good at the box office. The difference is Austin Powers franchise is more popular with people. It's funnier. It's made more money. We'll talk about all this tonight, and there will not be a shadow of a doubt that Austin Powers is so much better than Wayne's World. So my question to you, Bennett, is – I won't say it. I'll save that for my closing statement. I'll defer to Rutt now. I'll save that for later.
All right. Interesting. Mr. Rutt, what do you got to say?
Well, I do have a question, and I have a question for my opponent, Mr. Elrod. A sphincter says what?
What?
My point exactly.
Nobody knows.
Wayne's World. Wayne's World is iconic. Without Wayne's World, we don't even have Austin Powers. Wayne's World is really what set the stage. Bennett, you talked about all the great comedy classics of the 90s. And Elrod talked about how great it was as we got into the late 90s, but it's that early 90s that's a crucial point. And Wayne's World set the table for that to happen. You know, what we would call stupid comedies or fun comedies that really, you know, don't have a serious plot to it. Wayne's World really set the table and proved that that could be a success. And it did so while amassing a huge fan base. It is still a cult favorite to this day, but usually when you look at things that are cult favorites, they're not very critically acclaimed, but the critics loved Wayne's World. So it was loved by critics, it was loved by fans. The impact that it had on pop culture that we're going to get to here in a little while is astounding for a little movie that was made off a Saturday Night Live skit. The impact on pop culture was crazy. But tonight I'm going to prove to you why Wayne's World is better than Austin Powers. And when it comes to another win on this show, it will be mine. Oh, yes, it will be mine. Extreme close-up.
Ha, ha, ha.
Nice. I was actually surprised to see how highly the critics did rank the Wayne's World franchise, actually, because you wouldn't think they would go for it because it's kind of, you know, kind of silly, off the wall. It's crazy. But anywho, I love Michael Myers, and I could not imagine anybody else playing these two roles that he played in these films. So I want you guys to tell me a little bit about the character, or maybe characters, that he plays. And I do know a little bit about both these movies, so I will give bonus points in this round to anybody who can tell me something that I don't know.
Okay.
Mr. Elrod, kick us off. Tell me about the characters or character Michael Myers plays.
In the Austin Powers franchise, across the three movies, Mike Myers plays four characters. He plays the main character, the protagonist. He plays Austin Powers. He got the... I guess we'll talk about Austin Powers first. He got the motivation for Austin Powers from his father. His father passed away in the early 90s, and he was trying to come up with how he wanted, or Mike Myers was trying to come up with how he wanted to do his comedy. And he got the idea. Him and his father loved James Bond. That was their big thing. They loved James Bond. So he got the idea, I think it was 95 or 96, the idea for Austin Powers. He said in an interview that he was coming home one day and he heard on the radio, it says, "Where have all the swingers gone?" And then that kind of cultivated him like, well, what if I did a satire of James Bond and that film franchise? So he takes that and he takes some other things. He loves Benny Hill. He loves Peter Sellers. And he loves the Beatles, and he loves that 60s culture. So he kind of took it all together and threw it in a cup, and he just mixed it all up. And that is Austin Powers. The Austin Powers character is an outrageous character. He is a parody of the James Bond character from those movies. He's a sex-crazed British agent. He's got terrible teeth, which I probably threw out, right? I probably should have wore some bad teeth today. That would have been kind of funny. And a wig and some glasses, but he's just outrageous. And he has the catchphrases, "Oh, behave, shall we shag now or shag later, groovy." It's all these 60s motifs that he's bringing to the table. Now, on the flip side, Dr. Evil, the main antagonist from all three movies, he is a play off of Blofeld, one of the characters from the James Bond movies. And plot twist, or spoiler alert, if you haven't seen the third third Austin Powers movie, Dr. Evil and Austin Powers are related. They're brothers. Just like we learned in Spectre that James Bond and Blofeld were brothers. So you see a lot of the James Bond influence between the two characters. Of course, the other two characters that he plays in the movies is my favorite character in the whole series, Fat Bastard. It is a lot of people have, especially these days, they try to edit out this character because it's not politically correct. But he has by far some of the funniest moments in the films that we'll talk more about tonight. And also, he plays the one of the villains in the Goldmember movie. He plays Goldmember. So he plays four characters across the series. One thing that I'll say, we're going to be talking about a lot about James Bond, not about the relation between Austin Powers and those movies. But Daniel Craig, the most recent James Bond, had a quote in 2006. And this is just brilliant. He said that Mike Myers has effed up. He didn't use the word effed. He said it out. He's effed us on these James Bond movies. He said, we have to go darker because he's spoofed everything and he's left us no choice but to go dark with the series. And that's what's happened with the last couple of James Bond movies. There's been a lot of killing. You can attribute that to Mike Myers. He totally changed the James Bond genre about how he was spoofing the series. So that was the four main characters. Interestingly enough, he has to play the main character, Austin Powers. He plays Dr. Evil. They're never on the screen at the same time because they're having to switch it up. So you never see them on the screen at the same time. But the ability for him to play four of the main characters. And one thing I'll say is, before I turn this over to Rutt, this is a trivia question for you, Bennett. I've already told Rutt this. Who do you think was originally cast to play the role of Dr. Evil?
Jim Carrey. But he was doing Liar, Liar. Jim Carrey was doing Liar, Liar.
That's right. I think
Liar said, you know what? I'll just do it myself. I'll just do it myself.
He said that 30 to 40% of all of the scenes with Dr. Evil are improvised. They're not in script. It's amazing. So he plays four characters. We'll talk more about the other ones later on, but that is him in the actual movies.
Another thing about the Dr. Evil, too, is he said he didn't really believe so much in like using the bald cap. So he legit shaved his head for the Dr. Evil stuff. So he had to film the Austin Powers scenes first. And then he shaved his head to do the Dr. Evil scenes.
That's right.
So that's pretty crazy. All right, Mr. Rutt, Wayne's World.
There was a lot less physical toll for his role in Wayne's World. There was a lot less he had to put into it from a physical standpoint. But Wayne Campbell, the star of Wayne's World, has been Mike Myers' baby for a long time. Wayne Campbell was one of Mike Myers' first characters on a little skit called Wayne's Power Minute that he did on a CTV station in Canada around Toronto long before he was in SNL, long before he ever came to America. The character of Wayne Campbell is something he's been doing for years, long before Saturday Night Live and much, much longer before any of these movies hit the screen. And Wayne is kind of his baby, but the thing about Wayne is just maybe not the smartest guy, but Wayne Campbell may be the most likable and somewhat relatable character to ever grace a screen. He's funny, but there's just something that's extremely relatable about him to the point that I'll point out later. Even people who were what we would say hoity-toity critics who usually look at movies and may, you know, be critical of everything, but even those high top-wire critics go rave on and on and on about how relatable and how likable Wayne Campbell is. And there's just something about him that honestly, I don't know how to put it into words. He's just one of the more likable characters that there is. Sure, you may like Austin Powers, but you're not a 60s spy that loves to shag all the time. I'm fairly confident of that. You may love Dr. Evil, but you're not you know, some evil genius looking to take over the world with your little clone and your hairless kitty. But Wayne Campbell, Wayne Campbell is somebody we can all relate to. And I think that's hard to do, especially when you're looking at comedy movies. You're looking at the lead guy in a comedy movie. When you see a comedy movie, a lot of times you'll see maybe the co-star kind of become what everybody deems their favorite. And there's a little bit of that in Wayne's World. And Mike Myers just cut all that out with Austin Powers and just decided he'd play everything so no character could overtake him. But Wayne Campbell, extremely likable, extremely relatable. And I can't quite put my finger on why, but if you've seen Wayne's World, then you understand exactly what I mean.
Yeah, the thing with Wayne Campbell is like you just like you want to root for him throughout the whole movie. You're like, you know, you're always pulling for him. That's kind of how like how I see the movie.
Exactly.
So we've got Wayne Campbell and we've got Danger Powers. Is that right? Danger? Danger's his middle name.
Danger's his middle name.
Austin. Austin
Powers. Middle name. Trigger there, Elrod. Low on the trigger there.
Now, Mr. Myers, he does a fine job on both of these films, both the franchises. But there's also some great work by some other talented actors during these franchises. So we'll start with you, Rhett. Tell me a little bit about the co-stars?
Well, it's not Mike Myers, Mike Myers, and Mike Myers as the co-stars of the main character in Wayne's World. But I will say, we talked about likable. Even more likable than Wayne Campbell is Dana Carvey as Garth Algar. And in complete honesty, if we look at any character in any of these five movies, in either of the Wayne's World movies or any three of the Austin Powers movies, you poll 100 people, at least half are probably going to claim that Garth Algar is their favorite character of those five movies. He's that stupid guy, but also has that you want to root for. He's kind of that awkward, funny guy. He's just incredible. And it all started on Saturday Night Live. But he plays that sidekick role. And Dana Carvey, in my opinion, you talked about the great comics we saw in the 90s. Dana Carvey is one of the most underrated, funny people probably to ever grace SNL. And anybody that's ever seen any of his stand-up know that very well. Master of Disguise, a lot of people remember that movie, although I didn't look at the numbers, but it kind of sucked. But his shining moment on the big screen was definitely in his two movies as Garth Algar. And then you move and you look at Tia Carrere and Rob Lowe, and I'm going to talk about those two in subsequent topics. But you've got Kurt Fuller, another guy who's I say Kurt Fuller, and you two may not even know who I'm talking about. But if you saw him, you would know him. He's one of those guys that was in so many movies in the late 90s, early 2000s that played a hilarious character, but you never knew his name. He was the sheriff in Scary Movie. He had a bunch of little bit parts, but he plays a producer in this movie, and he's fantastic. Chris Farley is the only person in the Wayne's World universe to play two different characters. He played a security guard for a full minute and a half in the first movie and then had a complete role of a different character in the second movie. And we all know that Chris Farley has a deep, deep place in my heart, but he was fantastic. Meatloaf had a run in the first movie. And you got to remember, we're talking early 90s here. Ed O'Neill was a prominent character, especially prominent in the first movie, but he was also in the second movie. And who in the world was bigger than Ed O'Neill in the early 90s? I mean, Married with Children, Al Bundy was an icon. So Ed O'Neill was in these movies. You had Alice Cooper in the first movie, who played, from everything I've read, what is actually like Alice Cooper is. He's a very calm, intellectual human being when he gets off the stage. But he had a funny part talking about the history of Milwaukee and how the Indians settled there. But it was fantastic. And that's just the first movie. The second movie, Christopher Walken is your main basic antagonist. And any movie with Christopher Walken in it, even if it's the worst movie ever, goes from absolutely horrible to just kind of horrible. Because Christopher Walken is fantastic. Kevin Pollak's in the second movie, another absolutely, again, somebody that I say their name and you don't have any idea who that is.
Grumpy old man.
Go look up Kevin Pollak. Listen to Kevin Pollak stand up. He's absolutely hilarious. Speaking of Christopher Walken, his Christopher Walken impression, the whole bit he does on him, fantastic. But then when we got into the second Wayne's World, we got into a lot of cameos. People in one scene, something that happened a lot in Austin Powers, as I'm sure Elrod's about to tell us, but Kim Basinger, Drew Barrymore, Charlton Heston was in Wayne's World 2, Jay Leno, Heather Locklear, Rip Taylor, Aerosmith, and the spirits of Jim Morrison and Sammy Davis Jr. May have been Michael Nichols and Tim Meadows playing them, or it could have been the real spirit of Jim Morrison and Sammy Davis Jr., but just chalked to the gills with talent. And these movies were stacked. But out of all those people, Garth Algar is by far – you can't have Wayne without Garth. And I don't – as great as Wayne's World is, as great as I love Wayne's World, without Dana Carvey as Garth Algar, it would be nowhere near as good.
True. Elrod, is there anybody else that plays in the Austin Powers movies other than Michael Myers?
There's a couple. There is a couple. Like he said, both of these movies have a deep bench. I'd argue that Austin Powers' bench of other stars, especially on the cameo side that I'll talk about here in a minute, are a little bit larger than the one for Wayne's World. But if you talk about other people, not Mike Myers, Robert Wagner, who was on a lot of sitcoms in the 70s on CBS, was number two. He was a playoff Blofeld was number one in the James Bond movie, so he's number two in this movie. Mindy Sterling, hand women, she plays Frau. It's a parody of another James Bond parody on Her Majesty's Secret Service. Seth Green played Scott Evil, who I hope will come back for the fourth movie when it's made. It will be made. There's too much money not to be had. One of my favorite characters, Mini-Me. It made a household name off of Vern Troyer. Michael York plays Basil Expedition. We'll talk more about his love interest in a minute, but I know Rudd is going to salivate over Elizabeth Hurley, but she played Vanessa Kensington in the first and also a brief cameo in the second one. Heather Graham plays Miss Shagwell. And Beyonce, at the height of her popularity in the late 90s, early 2000s, in 2003, was Foxy Cleopatra. Michael Caine, and she's a whole lot of woman, ain't she, right? Michael Caine played Nigel Powers. He played Austin Powers' father. Let's talk about some of the lesser known. Will Ferrell was actually in made an appearance in the first and second movie as Miss Papa, or he was one of the henchmen. He was kind of an Arab play on a couple of characters from the James Bond movies. This Austin Powers movies made a household name of a cat, Mr. Bigglesworth. So you could argue that Mr. Bigglesworth is a co-star. He's also a play off of the Persian cat from, I believe it was Dr. No. So each of these, as you're seeing a trend here, all of these characters that he is putting out has some sort of James Bond connection. Now, I love the James Bond movies, and I hadn't watched all of it. There's like 25 or 26 James Bond movies, but the more movies I watch, the more I pick up on when I watch Austin Powers. It's like, oh yeah, oh he's from Dr. No, or he's that person. Now, he talked about cameos. Listen to this, or this list right here is a who's who of the late 90s, early 2000s. They made a movie inside the movie. It was Austin Pussy was the name. It was a playoff Octopussy, one of the James Bond movies. Tom Cruise played Austin Powers. Danny DeVito was Mini-Me. Gwyneth Paltrow was Dixie Normus. Kevin Spacey was Dr. Evil. Steven Spielberg was himself. Quincy Jones was himself. John Travolta was Goldmember. They could not have got a bigger star for the time to be in the second and third Austin Powers movie. And that, my friend, is Britney Spears herself. They got her to be in the movie. Ozzy Osbourne, Sharon Osbourne, Kelly Osbourne, Jack Osbourne, Willie Nelson, and Georgia State prison guard herself, Katie Kirk. So you see a lot of random people. Like he talked about Charlie, the Heston guy from the Wayne's World team. So he puts all these random people. You got Katie Kirk as a security guard, a Georgia State prison guard at that. But both of these movies, the cameos are both franchise sets. The cameos are great. I'd argue that the Austin Powers bench is a little bit larger, but be as it may, still pretty good.
Indeed, both of those are pretty impressive, honestly. Mm. Pretty impressive. So, staying on the subject of Mr. Powers here, you've got Austin Powers, who's out saving the world. He's this super cool spy guy, and somehow he still finds time for the ladies. So, Elrod, tell me a little bit about some of his love interests.
He is a ladies' man. I will give him that. Well, in the first movie, The International Man of Mystery, came out in 97. His love interest was Elizabeth Hurley's. I know Rutt's going to – he's closing his eyes right now. Vanessa Kensington. She was based on a character from Octopussy. She was a beautiful, determined, intelligent young woman. Austin became attracted to her in the first one. He ends up marrying her at the end. One thing about the Austin Powers movies is he has a different love interest in each movie. One thing was he didn't want to have the same one. Just like James Bond never had the same love interest in the original ones. Now, the newer ones, there's some carryover for his love interest. But the original ones, Sean Connery, he always had different love interest. So Vanessa Kensington was the first one, and they kind of kill her off in the second one as a film bot. So they made it seem like she was a robot the whole time. And that then she is replaced by Miss Shagwell, Felicity Shagwell, Heather Graham. She's only in the second one. She is based off of Tiffany Case in the 1971 James Bond movie Diamonds Are Forever. She's a CIA agent. She's partnered with Austin Powers. He's trying to get his mojo back in the second one. Dr. Evil wants to steal his mojo. He's convinced that that is the reason why Austin Powers is always getting one over on him. She has an attraction to Austin, too, but she's more concerned about her job. Just like in Diamonds Are Forever, it's kind of a double agent thing. He did not like the fact that Austin did not like the fact that Miss Shagwell had some relations with the fat bastard. And that kind of ended their little foray. She put a tracking device into one of his body parts. We'll let you figure out what happened with that. there's actually in the uncut version, from the second movie on to Goldmember, there's no explanation on what happened to Heather Graham's character. There's actually a scene that explains it, but they cut it out of the theater version. In the third movie, his love interest is Foxy Cleopatra. It is Beyonce. She's a groovy musician sidekick. She idolizes Austin Powers because this movie franchise is set in the 70s. It's based, Foxy Cleopatra is based off a character, Rosie Carver from Live and Let Die. She and Austin Powers are trying to stop Dr. Evil again in this movie, trying to stop Goldmember. And this is the movie where you see that Dr. Evil and Austin Powers are brothers. So he doesn't marry Foxy Cleopatra in the third one, just like James Bond did not marry Miss Rosie Carver. She was a double agent. But it's pretty interesting that in all three movies, they're following that James Bond motif of different love interest in each movie just to keep it up there and spice it up a little bit. You don't want to get complacent. James Bond never was. His new James Bond, not so much.
All right, right. We've got old Wayne over there. He's busy running his public access TV show. Does he still have time for the women as well?
Women, no. Woman, yes. Much like the difference between the number of characters Austin Powers plays in that franchise, or the different characters Mike Myers plays in that franchise versus what he plays in Wayne's World, there's also a difference in the number of love interests, because there's only one, and they only needed one in Wayne's World, and that was Cassandra. She's a babe. Cassandra Wong, a musician that he falls in love within the first 5 minutes of the movie, sees her playing in the club. She will be mine. Oh, yes, she will be mine. And that's kind of his theme throughout the movie. He kind of has to deal with Rob Lowe's character, trying to woo her away, in the first movie. And then in the second movie, he has to deal with her father not thinking he's good enough and wanting her to marry Christopher Walken's character. But the whole time, it's him not thinking he's good enough, thinking all these guys have much more to offer her than she can. But the genuinely likable, the guy that's so genuine that everybody roots for, still ends up with a girl in the end, or at least one of the endings of the first movie. The ending. But there was only one. They only needed one. Tia Carrera did a fantastic job of playing Cassandra. All the vocals she did as far as her band in the movie is actually her singing. She killed it. Don't get me wrong. Elizabeth Hurley, babe. Heather Graham, babe. Beyonce, babe. But there's only one for Wayne Campbell. And that's Cassandra!
Indeed, indeed. All right. I'm interested in this one. This should be a good topic. This is the one topic that I was excited for. So, Rudd, I'm going to start with you. Let's discuss some of the more funny moments or some of the more memorable or funny lines in the movie.
This is where, especially if we're doing the first Wayne's World versus the first Austin Powers.
Let's not do that.
But of course not. But even in general.
Second one.
This is where this shows that Wayne's World is better. And this is nothing against Austin Powers. I love the Austin Powers franchise. Bennett and myself grew up. I mean, how many times did we watch the second one?
100 billion times.
Exactly. So I take nothing away from Austin Powers. It's a fantastic franchise that's very near and dear to me. But nearer and dearer is Wayne's World. And a lot of the reason is because of these funny moments. And I think the first one that everybody thinks of is the car scene with Bohemian Rhapsody, where Wayne and Garth and their band are in the car, and they do the headbanging scene from Bohemian Rhapsody. And the funny thing about that is two things. Number one, the first Wayne's World came out a few months after Freddie Mercury, of course, as we all know, famed lead singer of Queen, died. But they shot this scene. This was one of the first scenes they shot. And somebody got it to Freddie Mercury and let him see this scene before he died. And they said that he was doubled over in laughter and thought it was one of the greatest things he had ever seen. Amazingly enough, speaking of the song Bohemian Rhapsody, when it came out in 1976, when Queen released Bohemian Rhapsody, it topped the charts in the UK, but in the US, the highest it got was number 9 on the charts. And then in 1993, when Wayne's World came out, and you got to remember, we've talked about this in previous episodes about how the charts were determined then. It wasn't by streams, it was by radio, by people calling in and requesting what people wanted to hear. This song had been out for 17 years at the time. Once Wayne's World came out, Bohemian Rhapsody went up the charts again and went to number 2 on the charts 17 years after it came out because of this scene in Wayne's World. So really, Wayne's World did a lot for the career and the pocketbook of Queen. Although I don't know that was necessarily their mindset when they put that scene together. But classic scene. Another classic scene, looking at classic rock. Bennett, something you texted me about the other day. When he goes in the music store, he's looking at the Fender Strat, and he wants to play it, and he gets it out of the case, and he hits 3 chords, and hey, No Stairway. No Stairway denied. Classic iconic line that gets quoted from a lot of people, even amongst us. You've got the scene in both movies where they're talking to Wayne about letting the sponsor, especially in the first one, letting the sponsor on. And he says, no, we'd never sell out to sponsors. And then it shows him drinking a Pepsi, eating a bag of Doritos, Garth decked out in his Reebok gear. Hilarious stuff. But they're, oh, we'd never sell out to sponsors. Just like we here at Convince Me would never sell out to sponsors on our Facebook show or on our podcast that we make over at anchor.fm, the number one one-stop shop for making your podcast. It's easy. Everything you need is right there. You can make money off your podcast with no minimal listenership. Anchor.fm, that's the spot for you. But we would never do that. You look at when they meet Alice Cooper, and then when they meet Aerosmith in the second movie where they drop to their knees, we're not worthy, we're not worthy. Classic, when they're playing hockey in the street and the cars are coming, car goes by, game on. You look at Garth's scene, you know, where I was talking about Foxy Cleopatra, and all I could think of was Garth's scene where he's having the fantasy about the woman in the diner, and he dreams he walks over and drops the quarter in the jukebox, and Foxy Lady by Jimi Hendrix starts playing, and he starts doing his dance across the diner. That's fantastic. You have the alternate endings where it looks like Wayne lost the girl. She didn't get the record deal. She ends up with Rob Lowe. His house burns down. And then they do another ending where it's a Scooby-Doo ending. And then they're like, no, let's go with the ultra happy ending. Wayne gets the girl. She gets the record contract. Rob Lowe gets kicked to the curb. And probably my favorite scene in any of these five movies has to be when he's interviewing Noah Vanderhoff, their sponsor. He doesn't want to do it. They've made him do it. And he puts handwritten notes on the back of the cue cards for the camera to see. The sponsor can't see it. Absolutely my favorite scene in either Wayne World movie, any of the three Austin Powers movie. It's just fantastic stuff.
All right, Elrod. What about Mr. Powers?
Well, I'll start off with my favorite scenes, especially from the first and second movie. It is a consistency of there's a scene in the first movie where they use shadow puppets. There would be a scene where they're trying to go into the bad guy's lair, and it's a hamper. There's a scene where he will be him and his love interest will try to go into the bad guy's lair, and there's no chance. This is just mean and cruel right here. I don't have any props. I should win because of that. Anyway, there is some scenes where, like, one of his henchmen will see something, but that's not really what's going on. Those scenes are hilarious. I mean, there's no dialogue. It's just stuff they're seeing, but then it shows Austin Powers what he's really doing. It's not what the henchman sees. It's pretty funny. My favorite scene from any of the Austin Powers movies comes from the first one, though. Dr. Evil and Scott are in a like a parent-child counseling, trying to break through some barriers. And Carrie Fisher, Mike Myers begged Carrie Fisher to be in one of these movies, and she kind of resisted at first, but she finally says, I'll be in it for a couple minutes. He cast her as a counselor, and it was kind of ironic, Carrie Fisher mediating a dispute about a parent and a son with her dealings in the Star Wars movies and her dealings with her own father, Darth Vader. But some other scenes from these movies that I love. What about when the sharks have the lasers on their heads? One thing that Dr. Evil always wanted was, where's these freaking sharks with their freaking laser beams attached to their heads? Well, Dr. Evil never got the sharks. Now, Scott did. and the third movie. But that's something that Dr. Evil always wanted. He wanted a shark with a freaking laser beam tied to his head. Well, Scott got it.
He got sea bass, but they were ill-tempered.
We'll talk more about a couple of scenes with my favorite character, Fat Bastard, here in a minute. But before that, Dr. Evil had this disdain. I mean, this complete disdain for Scott. He didn't really think that he was evil enough to run the family. And there's a scene where he says, you know what? You're the Diet Coke of evil. Which is so true. Diet Coke sucks, and it's so true. Now, my favorite Austin Powers quote was from the second movie where he asked Miss Shagwell, when she came clean about what she had to do to get the information from Fat Bastard, he says, how could you do it? The man's so fat. The sheer mechanics of it are simply mind-boggling. Now, that quote, plus there's a quote, I believe, from the first one where we kind of stole my thunder earlier when the danger is my middle name. The actual Ministry of Justice, which is basically Britain's Department of Justice, had a backlog of their agents wanting to change their middle name to Danger after the first Austin Powers movie was released. Now, I'm going to save my next little bit for our next topic, Rob Lowe, because that's very one of the funniest scenes in the entire series of Austin Powers has to do with Rob Lowe's performance. So we'll table that.
Go ahead. Go right into it. Go right into the Rob Lowe.
All right. So both franchises have some Rob Lowe component to it. Rob Lowe was actually in the first Austin Powers movie, International Man of Mystery, but he was not in the theater version. He was cut. Now, he is in the second movie. There is his only scene that in the entire movie, in the second movie, The Spy Who Shagged Me, he has a conversation with Fat Bastard, and he is playing young number two. They're back in time. And here, I will just read you the quotes. This is Fat Bastard. Dr. Evil, let's make a deal. You get the mojo, and you keep your money, and I'll get your baby. He says, I want my baby back, baby back, baby back. I want my baby back ribs. I want my baby. This quote right here. And then Rob Lowe goes, excuse me, Fat Bastard, chilies, baby back ribs, barbecue sauce. This quote right here is probably, besides the one-liners from Austin Powers, the most famous thing to come out of these three Austin Powers movies. Anytime you go to Chili's, I always think about, I want my baby back. I mean, everybody does. So Rob Lowe, even though he had a limited part in the series, is probably in one of the more famous scenes in the entire series.
Mr. Rutt, what about old Rob Lowe in Wayne's World?
Rob Lowe in Wayne's World. When you look at Rob Lowe in general, people love Rob Lowe for a lot of different reasons. He was a big teen heartthrob in the 80s. But when I think of Rob Lowe and my favorite Rob Lowe roles, it's when he's in a comedy film as the protagonist, as the bad guy. And the two that come to mind are Tommy Boy, which we've got to use some other time because my Chris Farley obsession is going to come through on the show at some point. But you've got Tommy Boy, and then you've got Wayne's World, the first one, where he was basically your main protagonist, where he played Benjamin Oliver, the regional programming director for Oliver Communications, just this real rich, good-looking guy that knew his way around. He was schmozzy. He was trying to steal the show from Wayne and Garth in order to make a buck. And Garth describes Rob Lowe's character a way of that I describe Elrod a lot of times. He said that if Benjamin Oliver were ice cream, he would be pralines and dick. And that's how really describes Rob Lowe's character and also Elrod. But just when you think of what we would say now, a phrase that didn't exist then, the Mr. Steal Your Girl, that was Rob Lowe. And then, of course, well, in one of the endings, he got the girl, but then He ended up not getting the girl. But just a fantastic role as this slick, smarmy guy that you know is going to end up with the hot chick. And the likable guy you root for, Wayne, you don't think he's going to get her. But, of course, eventually he does. But Rob Lowe just was fantastic in Wayne's World.
All right. One thing that we see a whole lot in the film industry is when a film comes out and it's a big, huge smash hit, what do they immediately start doing? They immediately start to make another one. They make sequels and more and more and more. Sometimes they're good. Sometimes they're better than the original, and sometimes they're just terrible. And both of these movies have sequels. So, Rutt, I'll start with you. Tell me a little bit about the original Wayne's World versus Wayne's World 2.
I'm going to keep this topic kind of short for multiple reasons. The first reason is I'm going to break it down a lot more in our next subtopic. But the second thing is, if there's one, I said the funniest moments, that was my strongest point, I felt. I feel like this is probably my weakest point, and here's why. When you and I've admitted this to Mr. Elrod earlier today on the phone, when you look at the Austin Powers movies, maybe not critically, but at least in my opinion and in the opinion of a lot of other people, I think the second Austin Powers was better than the first. I thought the third one was a drop-off from the first two, but I would probably put the second one at least equal with the first, if not better. When we look at Wayne's World, there was a lot of factors working against it. They changed directors. They put the movie out at a horrible time. Horrible timing with what it was up against. But tell, really,
it, tell them.
Do what?
Tell them who it was up against.
It was up when they released Wayne's World 2. It was out in theaters at the same time as Mrs. Doubtfire and Schindler's List. They picked a terrible time to put that movie out. So the numbers really, really show that. But beyond just the numbers, I mean, I'll be completely honest. In my research for this week, Saturday, I went and watched Wayne's World. Sunday, I sat down and watched Wayne's World 2. And Wayne's World 1 is a much better movie. So if you look at the sequels, Wayne's World 2 is still a great movie. It's a good movie. It did fairly well, especially considering the circumstances. But the sequel, you know, a lot of times the sequel's not as good. And Wayne's World fell into that category. The second one was a good movie, but it was not the phenomenon that the original Wayne's World was.
All right, tell us a little bit about Austin Powers, second one and the third one versus the first.
Well, this is, I think, one of my strongest points. I mean, this is why Austin Powers is such a franchise. I mean, the first one was not a huge box office success. It made $67 million on a $16 million budget. It was still successful. And it still has 71% Rotten Tomatoes. But the first one, International Man of Mystery, was also the one where I should have mentioned this earlier, when he wants to hold the world hostage for $1 million and doesn't know about inflation. He changes it to $100 billion. But it was – I will agree with Rudd on this. It was the success of the second movie. The second movie is my favorite one of them all. The second one is the one that had Britney Spears in it. Anything 90s, anybody you can imagine that had a big part in the 90s in the music field or in the entertainment field, you can find the second Austin Powers movies. Britney Spears, the movie also won an Academy Award for Best Makeup. The Spy Who Shagged Me, there was the title of the second one. There was a big controversy about the title. A lot of theater groups in this country did not want to put the movie on their marquee outside because of the word shag. They said, this is we're not ready for this. Finally, there are some compromises, and they ended up not censoring that. Another great thing about the second movie was American Woman, Lenny Kravitz. You had Beautiful Stranger by Madonna. it won a Grammy for being the title track in the second movie. And Madonna also is the only person to have a title track in an Austin Powers movie and also a James Bond movie with Die Another Day. So another correlation between the James Bond franchise and just the two of us. The great, great rap by Dr. Evil and the parody of Will Smith's cover of the Grover Washington classic. Now, the second one, you also see Jerry Springer. Jerry Springer was at its height in the late 90s. And you learn that Scott is the love child of Dr. Evil and Frog in the Jerry Springer appearance in the second movie. Go Member made $296 million. It made slightly less than the second movie, $313 million. But it was still a tremendous success. Now, I don't like the third one as much as the second one. I like it on equal footing as the first one, though. There's not a big drop-off between the second and third one, but the first and third are pretty even. It's a playoff of Goldfinger, You Only Live Twice, Live and Let Die, The Man with the Golden Gun, The Spy Who Loved Me, and GoldenEye. He has this is one where he has all the cameo appearances of Gwyneth Paltrow, Kevin Spacey, that whole crowd. But there's not the drop-off that you see in Wayne's World 2. I mean, Wayne's World 2 only made $8 million to box office. And there's a definite drop-off in the quality of the movie. But there's not a drop-off that I see in the quality of movie between the three. They're about the same, but I agree with Rod. I think the second Austin Powers movie is the best. And that's what establishes it as that 90s franchise along with American Pie.
Definitely, yeah. They definitely got it right with the second one for sure. And obviously, you look at both of these franchises, and us three, I think we can agree that both of these are great franchises. And that's a pretty good indicator that these films are probably well-liked by either the mass public or maybe even the critics or maybe both. So, Elrod, I'll start with you. What was the reception of the Austin Power films, and what kind of impact did it have on the film industry?
Well, it brought back 60s culture to the 90s. A lot of people my age growing up in the 90s really didn't know. I mean, we had heard of the hippie. We knew generally what a hippie was, but Austin Powers made hippies cool. I mean, this was a hippie living in modern time. He made British things cool again. He made British music cool again. You find that The Who had My Generation on the second soundtrack. He brought all of these people into the 21st century and the 2000 award nominations for 20 wins. It's won an Academy Award for Best Makeup. It's won a Grammy Award for Best Soundtrack. Grammy win for Best Song in the Motion Picture. Beautiful Stranger, we mentioned that before. It won some MTV Movie Awards with 8 nominations over the course of the three movies. It's won 2 Teen Choice Awards and 1 Golden Globe. It's also made a lot, and I mean a lot of money. It would make Dr. Evil proud. I mean, he wanted $100 billion, but I think he would sell it for $696 million. The one thing... Here's the reason why, if you want to know why Austin Powers, on the whole, is better than Wayne's World. You like that? I was waiting for it. I'm like,
yes, it didn't make a lot.
I got to laugh. There we go.
On the whole.
There's no drop-off. The first Wayne's World made a tremendous amount of money. But the second Wayne's World was a flop for box office standards. It's not an established franchise. In order to be an established franchise, you can't be a flop. One of your movies can't be a flop unless you're Rocky. Rocky V was. $696 million. The characters that have come out of Austin Powers are people today. They know who Mini-Me is. They know who Dr. Evil is. We want that fourth film, dadgummit. But Mike Myers, ball's his court on whether the fourth film is going to be made. He wants it to be based on Dr. Evil in his point of view. But studio execs want the Austin Powers character in the movie. So there's kind of some push and pull on that. He made the 60s cool. And that was a tall task for people like me growing up in the 90s. That was really cool. It had the 60s culture. He made a lot of money. He had some bad teeth. But on the whole, Austin Powers, better than Wayne's World. And more influential.
Mr. Rutt?
You know, I mentioned in my opening statement that Wayne's World set the table. And it set the standard. That if it weren't for Wayne's World, there wouldn't be Austin Powers. I don't know how big of a career Mike Myers would have gotten. But here's the thing. Wayne's World, when it came out in 92, grossed $121 million. It was the eighth highest grossing film of 1992 for a what we would call today a stupid comedy. It is the highest grossing film ever based off a Saturday Night Live skit. And there have been classics in that, especially Blues Brothers is one of the classic comedy movies of all time with Dan Aykroyd, the legend John Belushi. Wayne's World grossed more money than Blues Brothers. You also had Coneheads, Night at the Roxbury, Superstar, The Ladies' Man, MacGruber.
MacGruber?
I said MacGruber. It was going in order.
Ladies' Man?
I said The Ladies' Man. Do you pay attention to anything?
Blues Brothers 2000.
That sucked, but yeah, that was on there. It didn't have Belushi. And Farley had died, so Farley couldn't step into that role. And don't get me wrong, I absolutely love John Goodman. He's one of my favorite actors, but he did not belong in that role. That's a side point I wasn't expecting to make tonight. But it's the highest grossing Saturday Night Live film ever. But here's the catch. It's a stupid comedy. Critics loved Wayne's World. It is certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes with 84%. And Rotten Tomatoes calls it an oddball comedy that revels in its silliness and memorable catchphrases. Wayne's World is also fondly regarded because of its endearing characters. And when you're looking at movie critics, especially in the 90s, who do you think of?
Roger Ebert.
Siskel and Ebert, two thumbs up. Roger Ebert about Wayne's World. I walked into Wayne's World expecting a lot of dumb, vulgar comedy, and I got plenty, but I also found what I didn't expect, a genuinely amusing, sometimes even intelligent undercurrent. Critics loved Wayne's World. People loved Wayne's World. The impact that Wayne's World had on pop culture at the time, and even still into today. Everybody knows Bohemian Rhapsody today. I don't know that everybody would know Bohemian Rhapsody as well as they do now. I don't think it would be as well regarded as it is now. I don't think it would be a top karaoke song like it is now, if not for the headbanging scene in Wayne's World, because that's what everybody thinks of it. And like I said earlier, it was number 9 tops when it came out in 76. And in 93, it shot up to number 2 on the charts because of one scene in this movie. Catchphrases like schwing and shia and saying something, and even more so, you know, saying something like out at the beginning of the show. Yeah, this is going to be about Love Guru and Cat in the Hat. Not. That was a huge thing in the 90s. That originated with Wayne's World. That's What She Said. Did not originate with The Office. It originated with Wayne Campbell in Wayne's World. So the effect that it had on pop culture and the impact it had is still felt today. Elrod talked about the soundtrack for the second Austin Powers movie, which A, is fantastic. I owned it. B, he gets point deducted for not mentioning Burt Bacharach and Elvis Costello.
Oh my gosh,
it's the greatest song on that soundtrack. But if we're going to talk soundtracks, the Wayne's World soundtrack reached number one on the Billboard 200 as a soundtrack and was certified double platinum by the RIAA. And again, this was based on buys. People were going out and buying the Wayne's World soundtrack. People were calling radio stations and requesting to hear Bohemian Rhapsody because of Wayne's World. The impact it had was stellar. Now, we talked about Wayne's World 2 fell off, and it did. As far as the box office numbers, they're not great because somebody in the studio thought it was a good idea to put out a movie that didn't live up to the hype of the first one at the same time as Mrs. Doubtfire in Schindler's List. But as much as it was, the critics did not absolutely hate Wayne's World 2. It still got a 60% on Rotten Tomatoes, and to show these in comparison, the first Austin Power movie got a 71 on Rotten Tomatoes, so it's significantly lower than Wayne's World, but it is higher than Wayne's World 2. But when we look at just the sequels, Wayne's World 2 had a 60%, the second Austin Powers had 52%, the third Austin Powers had 54%. Like I said, it only grossed $48 million, and there was a $40 million budget. But again, we look at the critics, and we go back to Roger Ebert again, who still gave Wayne's World 2 3 out of 4 stars and said that Wayne and Garth are, quote-unquote, impossible to dislike. So while 2 didn't live up to the hype of 1, critics still liked it. It's not a terrible movie. It just didn't live up to the hype of 1 because 1 was such a masterpiece that had such a huge impact on pop culture.
Indeed. I went back and forth trying to kind of come up with a question for you guys, and I'm going to kind of change it up a little bit. And instead of trying to throw y'all a curveball, we're going to have a little bit of fun with my question here. It's going to go for both of y'all, and I'll give y'all a second to think about it, and I'll tell you mine. Rhett, I want you to tell me your favorite scene from Wayne's World, and Elrod, tell me your favorite scene from Austin Powers. But while y'all are thinking about that, I'm going to go ahead and go. First, for Wayne's World, obviously, yeah, you have, like, all the scenes that Rhett talked about earlier, you know, with the them in the car with Bohemian Rhapsody and, you know, the No Stairway and all the – there's a ton of them. So I picked one that I kind of thought was really underrated. It's really funny, and it's actually Garth in this one. It's Wayne's World 2. And the babe is kind of this babe, I think her name was Honey Hornay. Is that her name?
Yep.
She takes him back to this room and she's throwing herself at him. She makes him an adult beverage. He takes a swig of it. This Coke is flat. And then he's like, oh, I could tell you're a man that takes charge. He's like, yeah, one time when I was 17, my sister tried to borrow my Def Leppard album, and I said, no way. And so she's like, starts dancing and stuff, and then she gets him up and she's trying to dance with him, and he's like, oh, you're all wiggly. And he's just – it's a super awkward scene. And then she looks at him, and she's like, look, I'm going to be Frank. And he's like, can I still be Garth? It's hilarious. So that would be my scene for Wayne's World. And then for Austin Powers, I can't believe you left this one. This is my favorite scene. You know, there's the Fembots, like mm-hmm. you mentioned earlier, where Vanessa was one. He goes by this room and there's these Fembots. There's a ton of them in there. And they're going to try to seduce Austin and make him weak. And so they're all around him and they start trying to like seduce him. And he flips the script on them. And he his clothes off, and he's got like the Speedo on, and he starts dancing to I Touch Myself, and he's like shooting like these invisible rockets with his crotch and everything, and like he winds up blowing them all up. I think, I don't know why, maybe it's me, but that's like the funniest thing in the whole entire franchise for me personally. So I don't care who goes first. Elrod, go first. Tell me your favorite Austin Powers scene.
Well, I let the cat out of the bag earlier on this. It's a scene with Rob Lowe and Fat Bastard. You know, the reason I say this, can you imagine being the CEO of the Chili's restaurant franchise, and this scene comes out, and you have people coming in your restaurant, and they're singing this song, and you're like, what in the world are they talking about? And then going and looking it up on your dial-up internet in the late 90s and seeing, oh, my God, everybody from this point forward is going to equate my restaurant with Fat Bastard. Good and that's how it is. Even to this day, when someone's going to order those ribs at Chili's, someone at the table is going to say, Chili's, baby, back ribs. And they're going to think about the scene with him on the, from the second movie.
He's tiny.
I want to eat him.
Get in my belly.
He kind of looks like a baby.
Rhett, Wayne's World.
I think I've let the cat out of the bag earlier too, but it's for me, there's classic, and Ben and I agree with you on the best scene in the second movie was that one. But the first one, there's a lot to choose from, but it is the scene where he's interviewing the sponsor, Noah Vanderhoff of Noah's Arcades, and where they're forcing him to do it. And he has the handwritten notes on the back of the cue cards. And it's, so what's your favorite, what's the people's favorite game? And you see all the people in the back cracking up and the guy's just answering the question. He has no idea. Oh, well, how did you get into this business? Of course, this isn't exactly what it says. I edited these last two. But go watch Wayne's World to find out what they really said. I tried to keep it as family friendly as I could. But no, that scene is hysterical.
All right. We're literally getting down to the nitty gritty. The way I've got it scored right now, it's literally tied. So it's going to come down to the closing arguments. So Mr. Elrod, let's hear it.
Bennett, if we're going to score this based on what the critics think about Wayne's World and Austin Powers, that ain't going to be good, because the critics, these movies are movies for the most part that fans relate to, just ordinary people. You don't watch Austin Powers, you don't watch Wayne's World thinking it's going to be The Godfather. These are movies that are meant to be entertaining. Here is the one fact right here that I'll win on. You ask anybody under 30 who Austin Powers is. You ask 10 people. At least 9 out of 10 people, if not all 10, are going to know who Austin Powers is. They just are. On the other hand, if you ask 10 people who Wayne Campbell is, I'm like, what, who? Maybe 5 people knows who Wayne Campbell is. It's just the facts. Austin Powers is by far a more iconic character. I would say Dr. Evil is by far a more iconic character than Wayne Campbell is. It's more iconic. It's more successful as a franchise. The first Wayne's World was successful at the box office, but it's become a cult classic. A cult classic is defined as a film that has it's a small following, but it's like everybody loves it inside that group. Austin Powers is more expansive across age groups. People today, younger people today, are going to laugh at Austin Powers. It's relatable. Even older people that lived in the 60s they can relate, because he's kind of like those characters that they grew up with. People that love James Bond movies can relate to this, because they're like, oh, he's the character from Dr. No, or he's the character from Russia with Love. It's more relatable. It goes all across the age spectrums. Made more money. And I'll hammer this point across too. We talked about how American Pie was defined the late 90s, early 2000s. The same can be said for the Austin Powers franchise. It defined that 5-year period. And this is my plea right now to the world. This is my plea to you, Mike Myers. Please make the fourth movie. Please finish this thing out. It's going to make money. It's going to make bukus of money. With inflation now, it could make $500-600 million. Make the movie. I don't know what they're going to do about Mini-Me. God bless his soul. God rest in peace, Vernon Troyer. make the fourth movie. This is my plea right now. I want to convince you to win, but I want to convince Mike Myers to make that fourth movie because it can be done. Heck, he can play Mini-Me for all I care. With CGI, they can make him Mini-Me for all I care. So, more successful, more money. All across the age groups, they love it. They recognize who Austin Powers is, more so than Wayne Campbell. I win. Rhett loses.
Well, hopefully Mr. Mike Myers is listening to this podcast. If he's not, he should be, and we'll get that fourth one. But until then, let's wrap this one up. Mr. Rutt, take us home here.
That's what I was about to say. I appreciate your plea, but the odds of Mike Myers ever seeing or listening to this show, I have high hopes for this show. I don't necessarily know they're going to get that high. But I do want to call you out on one thing you just mentioned in your statement. You said it was more relatable. I don't see how in the world Austin Powers is more relatable.
The comedy.
What?
The comedy, the themes and motifs are more relatable than Wayne's World.
No, they're not. Because here's the thing. Like I said earlier, how many people do you know were spies in the 60s and were cryogenically frozen to come back and be a swinger in the 90s? How many evil geniuses do you know with freaking sharks with freaking lasers on their freaking
head? Hey, I would like to know some.
But you don't. How many guys do you know are genuinely good guys and try really hard, but they're still living out of their mom's basement, but dadgummit, you just want to see them break through? That's relatable. That's us, other than the mom's basement part. We're trying to take this podcast global. We're very local right now. We need a Rob Lowe character to come and seduce one of our wives and try to buy this show from us and take it to the top. It's not more relatable, but here's the thing. Yes, Wayne's World is a cult classic, but I don't think you and I have the same definition of what a cult classic is. It's a cult classic because it's still loved today. But here's the thing. For what it was in 1992, it wasn't just a cult classic. It was a mainstream success. Audiences loved it. Surprisingly, critics absolutely loved Wayne's World. And you said you didn't want to look at critics. I absolutely want to look at critics, people that know movies more than anybody will ever know movies, think that the first Wayne's World movie is by far better than any of these five movies we're talking about. But here's the thing, what I've talked about earlier, the massive impact it has had on pop culture, Wayne's World, that still lives today. That's what she said. People still say that all the time. We still say that all the time. It's died down a little now, but the not thing after saying something, everybody did that in the mid to late 90s. And it was because of this movie. Bohemian Rhapsody is as popular as it is today in 2020 because of Wayne's World as much as Queen putting it out. It just is. And here's the thing. This was my theme from the get-go. Mike Myers was fantastic on Saturday Night Live. This was a Saturday Night Live movie. This movie showed the world that Mike Myers was above Saturday Night Live. Because let's be honest, there have been a lot of funny people on Saturday Night Live, and there's not been many to go on to huge success outside of it. Now, there's a handful, sure. Will Ferrell. Especially when you look at those first few seasons, Chevy Chase and John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd. And then you get into Eddie Murphy. You get into the Chris Farleys, the Adam Sandlers of the world. But when you look at all the cast members they've had, there's only a handful that go above and beyond SNL. Mike Myers is one of them, but Mike Myers is one of them because of Wayne's World. And if he doesn't have Wayne's World to shoot him above SNL, we don't have Austin Powers. We probably don't have Shrek, and our kids are pissed about it. Without Wayne's World, we don't have the Mike Myers as we know him now. And Elrod, you say nobody knows who Wayne Campbell is.
You ask 10 people in the street, five of them are going to know who he is, and five are going to be like, who are you talking about?
I don't know that that's necessarily the case. I think there's going to be eight or nine that know who Austin Powers is.
There's going to be nine, maybe 10.
I'm not arguing that. But there's just as many people that know Wayne Campbell. Anybody that's a Saturday Night Live fan, which is one of the longest-running TV shows in the world that has a massive fan base, anybody that loves Saturday Night Live knows Wayne Campbell. When they had their 40th anniversary a few years ago, what big skit ended the show? Wayne's World. People know who that is. You play it off like people don't know who it is. People know Wayne Campbell. People know Austin Powers, but they know Wayne Campbell, and the impact of Wayne Campbell is far more felt than the impact of Austin Powers.
No.
We wouldn't have Austin Powers without Wayne Campbell. So, Bennett, I tell you, I think I have proven in a convincing way that Wayne's World is better than Austin Powers. The win, it will be mine. Oh, yes, it will be mine. And Elrod, I want to end with a question to you again. A sphincter says what?
Don't know.
Don't know. All I know is this. Second Wayne's World barely broke even financially. Barely broke even. And he's trying to make the argument that a franchise that made nearly $700 million is somehow below a franchise that the second movie barely flopped.
Rocky Five. Rocky Five.
Came back strong. Has there
Rocky Five
been another Wayne's World? He came back. He came back. It was a flop, but he came back. That flop was so bad with the second Wayne's World, he hasn't even tried to make another movie.
It wasn't a flop. He hasn't tried to make another Austin Powers movie.
He's about to.
There's got to be. Why do you think he's not made a fourth Austin Powers movie?
He certainly has, the numbers to make a fourth Austin Powers movie, because the third one was a financial success. You cannot see that for the second Wayne's World movie.
And you know what? If Wayne's World had not come out against Mrs. Doubtfire and Chandler's List, I think it would have made more than $8 million. It did not live up to the expectations of the first one. It still made money. It didn't lose money.
And apparently,
the critics liked it a whole lot better than they liked the Austin Powers sequel.
Not really. We've all admitted that our second Austin Powers movie is our favorite one.
Yeah, they are. The second Austin Powers movie is my favorite Austin Powers movie. But critics,
maybe the critics don't believe it is, but
better
it's a good
than you do, better than I do, said the second Wayne's World's better.
If we're going to try to decide what the critics think about these two movies, we have ran this car into the ground, because that is not – these movies, by their very nature, are not critic acclaimed movies.
Hold on just a second. Bennett, hold up. I'm going to do some last second something here. And if what I'm thinking is wrong, I'll just shut up and let you go to the decision. But
I need time to stall, so go ahead.
Do what?
I need you to stall for time.
Okay.
Second and third Austin Powers movies have over 50% critic reviews on Rotten Tomatoes.
Let us see here. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a first in this show. I have never, in the history of this show, not had all my research done. Let's see. The audience score for the original Wayne's World is an 84.
It's higher than first Austin Powers.
71.
The audience score was better than the critic score for the second Wayne's World. That score was at 63, as opposed to the critic score of 60. Now let's look at the Austin Powers. So we've got 84.
48 million. 48 million is never what you focus on compared to 40. 8 million is how much money the second Wayne's World made. $8 million.
Austin Powers, audience score 70%. Still lower.
They should make 100 more. Maybe if they make 100 more movies, they'll come close to what Austin Powers has grossed on three movies. Maybe if Matt Myers makes 200 more Wayne's World movies, maybe then he'll come close to what he did with Austin Powers.
Gold member audience score was a 44. People hated
it. Made a lot of money. A lot of money.
because of the success of the first ones. The Wayne's World 2 would have done the exact same thing if the studio had put it out at a more advantageous time.
The studio has been begging Mike Myers to make a fourth movie. No one is begging him to make another Wayne's World. No one is breaking down Mike Myers' door right now. You've got to make a third Wayne's World. But the studio has been begging Mike Myers for 14 years to make a fourth Austin Powers movie. That's why I win, and that's why I convinced Bennett tonight.
No, you're wrong. I guarantee you, and there's no way that we can ever argue this, so I'm just going to assume I'm right, and I'm never going to be proven wrong on why I'm right on this. A third movie would be more successful than a fourth Austin Powers because the third Austin Powers was meh.
And at least six out of ten people on the street do not know who this Campbell guy is.
They do. Where do you think that people don't know who Campbell is?
Where we go out and interview random people that we don't know, and we'll ask him, "Do you know who Mike Myers or do you know who Austin Powers is?" And then we'll ask him, "Do you know who this Campbell guy is?" And then we'll show the world that I was right and you were wrong.
Let's do it.
I'm in.
There's the Saturday Night Live machine behind Wayne's World.
Maybe in the rut bubble, the Kiss Campbell guy is like this important guy. But the general public, they don't give a crap. They don't. That's the reason why $48 million compared to a $40 million budget. $8 million. $700 million. The three Austin Powers movies grossed. Mm. And now he's got his fancy cutouts because he knows he's beat.
I will tell you, Rutt got one bonus point, the only bonus point I gave, and that was for the Wayne Campbell character before Saturday Night Live. I did not know that. That's the only point I gave. I'm stingy on my points. They're not like Rutt points.
Everybody knows what the Rutt points are, though. It's just a matter of saying them.
Oh, boy. I really don't know what the heck I was thinking when I said, sure, guys, yeah, I'll moderate this one, sure. That was a terrible idea. Yeah, this one's really, really close. I'm going to go over this real quick just so I can stall for, like, one more minute. If you break it down, yeah, Rutt got the bonus point. If you look off the characters, I gave it to Elrod just because – he plays four freaking characters. I do like how likable that Wayne was, and you do pull for him, but to do the four characters is just crazy. So Elrod got that. When you look at co-stars, there's too many, especially when you add in the cameos and everybody that was in on both of these, huge stars on both sides. So I gave that one a tie. I took the cheap way out.
That was a tie.
Darth Algar should have won that by himself.
I don't know, did he?
I don't know. It had Will Ferrell. Even though if it was a small part, he had Will Ferrell and Seth Green.
Wayne's World had Chris Farley.
Nope. Too late.
I don't know. Vern Troyer.
Yeah, mini-me.
He only played a small part.
Really, too, when you look at it, the cameo. And now I get it.
That took a minute.
Yeah, I was – I mean, just the cameos in the second one of Austin Powers is just crazy, just in the first part. Love interest, I give it to Rutt. Even though I know Austin Powers has three different ones that kind of goes with the James Bond theme, I feel like it's more genuine, you know, with Cassandra there. So
you got
Rutt winning that one.
Swing.
As far as funny moments and funny parts, there's really too many to count on both of them. They're both hilarious, so that's a tie. If I had to lean, I would lean with Wayne's World being funnier just for some of the parts that it has, but I don't know if I could. That's like right there in the middle. Mr. Rob Lowe, I think he had a way bigger role with Wayne's World. So I gave that to Rutt. I do like him with the fat bastard scene, though.
Oh, it's got to be a tie.
When you take in the original versus the sequels. I think Elrod takes that one pretty easily. So that still has us tied going into the impact that these films had. And both y'all made very, very fair points. You know, one of them made a lot of money, had a lot of awards and Grammys and the characters. The other one, critics loved it. It was, like you said, about being the best from a the best skit to cut for a movie from Saturday Night Live. So I kind of took the easy road on that one too, and just gave that one a tie too. So it literally came down to the closing statement. It literally came down to the closing statement. I had no idea. But when you look at both of them, there's one that's a little bit more successful and iconic, and a little bit of a stronger franchise. So I literally scored this one 51-49 for Austin Powers. Yep. I can't believe it. All right, gets a second win.
Look how dejected he looks. Can we screenshot this? Can we screenshot this? And then after this, I'm going to go out and find 10 people that's going to, and at least six of them are going to have no idea who this Campbell guy is. Well, so I'm going to add punishment to Rutt for this. How about that? How about that? He's so sad. Sad panda. Sad panda.
That's how I looked last week.
You have let down Wayne's World. How does that make you feel? How does that make you feel?
I feel like even Goldmember, which was the least of the three, still holds up as almost as well as the first. Mm. But the second, Austin Powers, is kind of what clinched the tie for the films.
Mm.
It was close, though. It was literally down to the closing argument.
Groovy, baby.
That's all.
He looks so mad. Look at him. Look at him. He looks so sad.
Can we get the alternate ending now?
Nope.
We can do one.
No.
Okay.
Start from the beginning.
I don't even know what to say.
Speechless.
I should be fired and replaced. I lost an argument
that way.
Mm-hmm. I did too. It's okay. Elrod's on a roll.
Once you accept it, it just makes everything better. Acceptance is the first step, right?
I mean, I feel like we've sold out. Our gimmick is dead again. We've sold out. And I swore we would never sell out. We would never be forced into doing things by anybody, by any public pressure, by any sponsor, like our sponsors over at anchor.fm. Remember to check us out there. anchor.fm/convinceme show is where you can support us directly. Remember to support us on our socials, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We're on to YouTube's. Podcast drops every Wednesday. Guys, even if you've watched this, go give us a listen, because we need your listens to have more sponsors than just anchor.fm, who puts up our show. They're a great sponsor, but we need more, and we need listens to get more. So, guys, help us out. We hope you've enjoyed tonight's show, because I sure haven't. Gentlemen, any closing thoughts?
I'm going to celebrate by listening to Bohemian and Rhapsody right here. How about that? Is this the real? Is this just fantasy? Caught in a
landslide. No escape from reality. Here's the guy that doesn't even mention Elvis Costello and Burt Bacharach.
It is true.
That's the suck.
You didn't even talk about what the coffee tasted like.
Yeah, we could literally be here all night doing quotes from these movies.
Okay, right. Acceptance is the first key. Acceptance. Got accepted.
Congratulations. You're 2-43. Good news, though. I'm pretty sure you've locked down the first round pick next year. Anyway, like I said, I haven't enjoyed it, but I hope you all have. I hope you'll come back next time when we discuss. I don't know what we're discussing. We hadn't talked about that yet. It'll be my turn to mediate, which is good because I don't know. I'm apparently in a huge slump, and I need some time off to recover from such. But, again, any parting words, gentlemen?
Don't hate the player, hate the game.
That's all I got to say about that.
I don't smoke anymore, but I need a cigarette. All right, guys. We hope you'll join us next week. We hope you enjoyed this a lot more than I did. But until next week, for Brian Bennett, for Casey Elrod, this has been Convinced Me. And Elrod, you have conned Bennett. We'll see you guys next time. Peace.